State Villa Esposito?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Rouse, I assume you've been watching the proceedings and getting a bit of a legal education in the process. You will have 15 minutes to present your argument, and you can reserve any portion of that to respond to opposing counsel's argument if you wish, rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Do you wish to save any time for rebuttal?
Yes, a few minutes, if I may.
Three?
Yes.
All right, you may approach and begin when you're ready.
Thank you. I'm actually not positive I can do this, so I've printed out my, I guess you call it an argument, and I'd like to give it to you just in case, if I may, just in case I have difficulty representing myself.
We have the briefs, and the your argument today is being recorded.
Okay.
So we do have the benefit of that, so
thank you.
Your accommodation.
Thank you. I am pro se in this case. I sincerely thank each of you for your time in reviewing my appeal. My comments should take less than 5 minutes. I respectfully ask not to be punished for listing so many items in this appeal. In an effort to reduce or eliminate these items prior to this hearing, I ask for an appellate settlement conference in both my opening and reply brief, but received no reply to my request. I'm sorry, if my voice quivers, I'm very nervous.
Mr. Rouse, let me address that, and we'll certainly address it in writing, but just to let you know, that provision is in the rules, but it has not been actually implemented.
Thank you. As you might expect, I'm not very knowledgeable about the proceedings or the court. I would like to say that prior to this appeal, I spent over $26,000 in legal fees on three different law firms, only to find myself drained of funds and without legal representation. So I ask you to accept the fact that I had no feasible choice but to proceed pro se. I simply do not have the ability to argue case precedent or even procedural matters. However, I have 31 years of experience in enforcing the laws of the Commonwealth of Virginia, so my primary reason for this appeal is due to the fact that the judge did not adhere to the law or case precedent. In reviewing the rulings of this court, I noticed each of them is ruled upon individually. I also know that the lower court is given broad authority in a divorce proceeding. However, I ask you to consider the overall mindset of the trial court before ruling on the individual items. The trial court's bias is particularly evident by the following. There were three separate rulings against myself that were not raised by the defendant's counsel. Reversal of the trial judge's own previous ruling to pay alimony was done in the final decree. And the trial judge's refusal to hear additional evidence regardless of my pleas. The record is clear that Kathy, my ex-wife in this case, plotted to get rid of me as soon as her son, my stepson, graduated from high school and the marital residence was paid off by myself. A month after the marital residence was paid off, the wife signed a contract to purchase a $100,000 condo and began seeking counsel to determine her best course of action to end the marriage. Not only did Kathy not contribute significantly monetarily or non-monetarily to the marriage, but the trial judge concluded she secreted money throughout the marriage, and you can refer to the trial judge's notes for that because it's not in the record. Kathy also did everything within her power to attempt to turn her only child, my stepson, against me after I was the only father figure he had throughout the marriage. Kathy was jealous of my lifelong and continuing relationship with her son, and she wanted to end my relationship with him just like she successfully did with her son's natural father when the boy was an infant. Fortunately, Kathy's efforts failed, and her son and I are closer than ever. Give me just a moment, I'm sorry. After all these things Kathy has done to wrongfully discredit myself in both the eyes of her son and everyone we knew, the trial judge rewarded her with greater than 100% of the proceeds from the sale of all marital property at auction. This ruling was in spite of the fact that the record is clear and uncontested as to the fact Kathy contributed less than $4,000 to all marital property sold at that auction. Kathy owns a home that costs more than the marital residence. She just purchased a new car. She recently offered to purchase her son a house of his choice while last year I had to borrow $134,500 to keep the house I paid $124,000 for at the beginning of the marriage prior to the separation. Not a single person other than Kathy testified they thought I physically abused Kathy. Not a single person other than Kathy testified they thought I physically abused Kathy in any of the numerous proceedings in this divorce. I beg you not to reward Kathy in lieu of her clear, constructive, and physical desertion of the marriage she planned at the perfect time so that she may receive the maximum monetary benefit. I'll take any questions you have.
Can I ask you a question? There was a hearing, it appears, on March 24, 2014.
Yes.
And then another one on June 16, 2016.
Yes.
Was testimony presented during those hearings about the properties that was in dispute?
I'm sorry, I may be wrong about the dates, but I believe the 2014 hearing was the actual hearing for the divorce.
For the divorce. So that was the hearing where it was determined what the grounds for divorce were going to be.
Yes, but there was really no significant discussion about the value of the property.
How about on June 16, 2016?
I'm not aware of any significant discussion about that. The judge did conclude by his own determination. There was an appraisal on the house that was court-ordered early in the proceedings, back in 2010, I believe, and he relied upon that appraisal to determine the distribution of the marital property and specifically the house.
And that was part of that June 16th hearing?
Yes, and he ordered the court. He had a court-ordered auction. He gave me the option of that or paying her half of the appraised value.
The record does not contain a transcript of either of those two hearings. Did you deliberately decide not to file those or with the clerk's office, or did they just not get filed?
Are you talking about the actual hearing for the divorce?
I'm talking about the two hearings, the March 24th hearing in 2014 and the June 16, 2016 hearing.
I'm sorry, I may be mistaken in matching the dates up to the hearings, but there was one 3 or 4 hour hearing, or I'm sorry, more than that, that was what I consider the actual divorce proceeding. And then about a month later, we met and the judge ruled on those. And if you could repeat your question again, I'll try to answer. Yeah.
Well, the transcripts from whatever was heard on those two dates is not in the record.
Yes.
So we as judges don't know what happened those days. And my question is, did you know that those weren't in the record? And if so, did you just make a conscious decision for one reason or another not to include them?
No, if I did not include it in the record, to the best of my knowledge, there is no record of it. I went straight to the courthouse and took all of the records and included them in that huge book that I sent you. So if there is no, I can confidently say that if there is no record of a hearing, then it was not recorded.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Plenty of time for rebuttal if you so choose.
Appreciate it. Sorry about my nerves.
That's all right.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, I'm Faith Esposito, Catherine Rouse's attorney. In determining where to start here today, I think I will address generally the overall presumption that the trial court in this case had to deal over 9 years with many motions, hearings, one set of depositions. My understanding that there was no recording, no transcript made of any of the Oratina's hearings that were held during this proceeding.
Can you help me with those two dates that I mentioned, March 24, 2014,
yes,
and June 16, 2016? Because it appears to me that whatever happened on those two days, there was evidence presented that is relevant to the assignments of error.
The March 24th hearing, my understanding is it was an all-day hearing to resolve all issues in the divorce and some of the equitable distribution and support issues. Then he announced his decision from the bench about a month later, and that order was entered, nunc pro tunc. And then the June hearing, the June 16th, 16 hearing, was to approve the sale of the auction of the property and to determine issues that involve the value of the property, the repairs on the property, and that sort of thing. And it was also not recorded in any fashion.
And we have no written statement of facts in the record then?
No, none was offered. And so in light of that, appellee's position obviously is this trial court had to deal with these issues on an ongoing basis for 9 years, and obviously is the best determiner of what actually happened and how these factors need to be weighed and how this distribution needs to be made. The only issue I think that we're talking about here today in terms of equitable distribution really is the house. There was never any real argument, or none was raised on appeal for the cars and the retirement and the things like that that were also decided by the court to be fairly equally divided. as far as the issue on marital pendente lite spousal support, I'm not sure that I fully understand the issue that he's raised. Trial court has wide discretion in setting pendente lite support, and did at $400 a month over the signature of Mr. Rouse's attorney as requested. She prepared the order. It was requested. He never objected to pendente lite support. And that ended at the final order, at the entry of the final order. So we're not here on a spousal support issue. In terms of fault in the breakup of the marriage, there is no basis whatsoever that this court should not have entered a divorce on a separation of 1 year.
Well, the court has the discretion to decide which of several provable grounds for divorce to use to support the decree.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in doing so, I might add that Mr. Rouse didn't present any corroborating evidence at all, much less as to desertion. In fact, he filed the divorce. He then served her with the divorce while she's still living in the marital home, and then she vacated. She didn't leave the marital home until she'd actually been served with the bill of complaint. So that issue, I believe, is not one that I need to spend a whole lot of time on here today. I think Mr. Rouse's arguments that he didn't get to present enough evidence or he needed to present more evidence, he certainly presented more when he filed his objections to the final decree. He added a lot of evidence that wasn't introduced in any fashion during the proceedings themselves. But the fact that he wasn't allowed to present his case is really hard for me to understand, because they had two very lengthy Oratina's hearings. They had a day's worth of depositions that were his depositions that were submitted to the court, and the court said, I am relying on the depositions and I'm relying on the transcript of the 14 hearing, the notes of the 14 hearing. And so he did that, and based on all of that, there's no issue here that I can see that's been raised that he was plainly wrong, that he misapplied any of the factors relating to the house under the equitable distribution statute, or that he miscalculated in some way. Mr. Rouse just doesn't like the result. He didn't get the result he wanted, and he wants the court to change that result. And I think if we did that in every single case that we had like this, in terms of presentation of evidence and continually coming back to the court to ask for reconsideration, what happens is you have this, like you had in the Fadness case, that this court is very, interestingly, very similar to this case. It has gone on and on and on. We even dealt with an appeal to this court of an order that was not final, which this court rejected for that purpose. So all that being said, there's nothing here out of the ordinary, plainly wrong, or anything that Mr. Rouse can point to that would constitute an abuse of discretion on the part of this judge. And we would ask the court to affirm the ruling of that court.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
You've got some time remaining. Do you wish to address any of the issues?
Kind of like a bumbling idiot here.
It's all right.
I'd like to try.
Ms. Esposito referred to the March 24th hearing that was an all-day hearing. And there was definitely a record of that hearing. I think it is in the, if that's the same date, it is in the appendix. The June 16, 2016 hearing was to approve the sale. I don't believe that was of record. Ms. Esposito indicated that I did not object to pendente light spousal support, which is not true. When it was first ruled on by Judge Kirksey in, I believe, 2008, my attorney at that time did enter an objection to that ruling. Then there was an actual hearing on the case, which I don't believe there's a record of, but I reference it in my brief. Ms. Esposito's father, who was representing my ex-wife at the time, had a hearing to get me to pay the pendente light spousal support. I raised the issue of the calculation, and the judge did not rule that I had to pay it at that time. And I believe that was in 2014. So on two occasions, I formally objected to the spousal support. Regarding the desertion, Ms. Esposito mentioned that there was no indication that Kathy needed, my ex-wife needed to, whatever, until she was served the divorce papers, which I filed. That's not true. It's very clear in both my reply brief and my initial brief that she stated directly to the trial judge on his direct question that following her failed attempt to obtain a restraining order hearing, she had every intention to leave the marriage. Between the time that hearing occurred and the time she was served, she actually purchased a home to move to, and as in my original filing, her intention to basically clean out the marital residence while it's out of town is the reason I filed for the divorce. So by her own direct testimony to the court, she admits to her intention to leave the marriage prior to me ever attempting to or concluding that I wanted a divorce. That's all I have. Do you have any questions?
Any questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
We will greet counsel.